Okay, good evening all. Thanks very much to everyone for being here via Facebook in particular. As I speak, I'm just muting a few people who are not muted. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and I'm delighted to welcome you to this Kingborough Council meeting. It's Monday the 9th of June at 5:30 p.m, and so I officially declare this meeting of Kingborough Council open. For all councillors, staff and members of the public who are viewing tonight, it's my first job to let you know that not only is this meeting being live streamed on Facebook and the video available for the rest of time, we also record the meetings and they'll be available on our website later on if you require to review any of the proceedings. The next item is that I'd like to begin tonight by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of the land on which we don't all meet together tonight, but we all are sitting on the land of Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to fight and maintain their identity, their culture and Indigenous rights. Next item this evening is the attendees and the attendance tonight. We have myself, Councillor Winter, we have Councillor Westwood with us, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Wass, Councillor Reed, and as seems to be the case, usually I find Councillor Street is online as well. So that's all 10 councillors are in attendance this evening. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold. Our Deputy General Manager is Tony Ferrier. Our Chief Financial Officer is John Breen. Our Executive Manager of Engineering Services is David Reeve. Our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services is Daniel Smee. Our Manager of Finance is with us, Tim Jones. Our Manager of Development Services, Tasha Tyler-Moore. Our Stormwater Engineer is Alex Aronson. Our Urban Designer is Paul Donnelly. Our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox. Our Strategic Planner is Adrian Stander, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. So we have a very large crowd with us tonight coming from all over Kingborough. Apologies, there are none because all councillors are in attendance, as you heard earlier. The next item is on page one of the agenda, and I'll be looking for a councillor to move and one to second that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 9, held on the 25th of May 2020, be confirmed as a true record. Which is a true record? Councillor White.
I'll second it.
So that was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone. Now I've got an echo issue. And it's Councillor Bastone. Councillor Bastone, I won't unmute you, but perhaps you could try and connect some headphones before you next unmute. That's it's quite difficult, and I think it's going to come through on the Facebook live stream. So that was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 9 held on the 25th of May 2020 be confirmed as a true record. All those in favour, please unmute yourselves and say aye.
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 If there's anyone against, please say no. The motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the workshops held since the last council meeting. Since the last council meeting, no workshops have been held. Declarations of interest. Does any council have an interest that they would like to declare? Councillors, I am having to do a bit of work here in muting people, so if you can please, if you're not speaking, make sure that you mute yourself so that we're not getting that background interference. There are no declarations of interest, so next item is transfer of agenda items. Would any councillor like to transfer an agenda item on this evening's agenda? There being none, I will move on to questions without notice from the public, as we've had previously, because we are doing these meetings via remotely. We don't have members of the gallery and unable to host questions without notice, but as I do every week, I remind any member of the public that you can ask a question on notice by emailing kc@kimbra.tas.gov.au. Address a question on notice to the General Manager, and that'll be included in our next agenda. And the next item, of course, is questions on notice from the public, and you can see that members of the public, three of them, have asked questions on notice in writing to the General Manager, and the first one of those is on North Wellesley Avenue, and it's from Tricia Ramsey, and there's an officer's response there also included on page two. The next item is on Huntingfield development from Mr. Darrell Pike, who's also has a response there from Mr. Tony Ferrier, and the third question is from Anne Harrison. It's on the fencing of the Blowhole Reserve, Blackmans Bay, with an officer's response from Mr. Daniel Smee. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Bastone, I think you have a question.
I do, Mayor. I sent you a note. Do you want me to ask the questions about the fire at Great Bay?
I think you better now.
Thank you. I was over there yesterday after receiving a number of phone calls and emails about the emission of smoke that's coming from a property at Great Bay on Bruny Island. It appears to be a peat fire that's been burning for some weeks now. Is the council taking some action about this on behalf of the residents? I realise that we, of course, don't have any jurisdiction over fires as such, but the EPA and the DPIPWI and the owners all seem to be just passing it from one to the other, so I'm wondering what we can do about it.
Yes, thanks for your question, Councillor Bastone. I am still getting that echo, by the way, so I've muted you again just to prevent that from happening. You are correct, there is a peat fire. I understand you've been over on the island over the weekend. I've been provided with photos from a number of residents and yourself, and been contacted by a number of residents. I spoke to Minister Mark Shelton, who's the Minister for Emergency Services, today, to his office, and they have provided me with the advice that from tomorrow the Tasmanian Fire Service will be taking control of that fire in a formal sense, and my understanding is that means they'll be the lead agency in dealing with it. There is a peat fire there, and we, as you know, Council doesn't have firefighting capabilities, but except we do have an advocacy role, and we're really happy with the response that we received from the Minister's office today, and we trust that the Tasmanian Fire Service is the best agency to deal with the fire in a public safety point of view, and I look forward to them managing it over however long it takes for the fire to be extinguished. So that answers your question, Councillor Bastone.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Mayor. And I have another two questions. And I'm sorry that you're getting an echo, but I have no headphones with me today. The next question is about the Cruising Yacht Club of Tasmania's proposal to build at Barnes Bay. On reading their magazine, the report states, after our proposal was presented and formally discussed, it has progressed to the next stage and planning approval has been granted. I'm just asking if this is in fact true. Have we granted planning approval on land that isn't our land anyway? And secondly, what part has Mr. Paul Donnelly played in submitting plans for this barbecue shelter?
Mr. Ferrier, do you want to take this question?
Yes, thank you. Three Mayor. Yeah, I'm getting the echo as well. There's been no development application lodged. Mr. Donnelly has only had some initial conversations with the Cruising Yacht Club of Tasmania. We're aware of their proposal. That's being investigated. There's been no commitments made. As Councillor Bastone indicated, It is on Crown land, the proposal, so Crown consent would be needed prior to any lodgement of a DA. We don't have any plans as such to consider. We are just initially considering the proposal, and we would certainly be consulting with the nearby landowners prior to any decision being made by council.
Thank you. My third question is, Mr. Ferrier might be able to answer this through you, Mayor. I thought the original plan for sealing the Alona to the Lunawana Road included from the Lunawana Hall to the start of the Lighthouse Road, but it appears to have stopped 150 metres short. Is there a reason for this?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through you, Mayor. No, I'm not aware of that. I understood that the sealing of the main road was only from Alona, the end of the seal at Alona to the end of the seal at Lunawana. I wasn't aware that there was a further extension of that seal on the southern side of Lunawana. I think it only goes to the actual Lunawana Township itself. But if there was an original proposal to go further, we can investigate that with Department of State Growth and see why that additional bit wasn't included.
Thank you. And my final question, I read in the latest online Woodbridge news that the dog poo bags have already been installed at Silverwater Park. I went down and I couldn't find them. Could we therefore know when they will be installed and what the signs that forbid dogs in Silverwater Park and the beach, will they be removed rather than be there beside the dispenser of dog poo bags? Thank you.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, I'll have to take that one on notice and provide a response.
Thanks, Mr. Reeve. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. My questions are about short-stay accommodation, and I apologise in advance if some of these require, they might need to be taken on notice. In February 2020, the first report on data collection from the Short-Stay Accommodation Act 2019 was published. As far as my reading of it goes, it showed that there were 223 properties in Kingborough listed as short-stay accommodation properties where was not the owner's principal place of residence. That is to say, the entire property was used for Airbnb. My question is, what is the total number of properties in Kingborough that are currently approved for visitor accommodation?
I think we'll have to take it on notice, but unless Mr. Ferrier or Ms. Tyler Moore have that information at their fingertips.
Through you, Mayor, the data that's come back from the state government through that new act has revealed there's quite a lot of errors in their data, which we've raised with them, and I don't have the number on hand about how many approvals we do have, but we can provide that information at the next meeting.
Thank you so much. My second question through you, Mayor, is, what is the opinion of the council? Do we anticipate that all of those properties will go back to short-stay accommodation after the COVID pandemic, or is there an opinion that some of those will revert to rentals? Do we have any sense or broad comments around that?
Again, Mr. Ferrier or Ms. Tyler Moore, I'm happy for either to take that.
Through you, Mayor, we wouldn't want to speculate about what people want to do, and we don't have really any anecdotal information from applicants that I'm aware of about what they want to do. In some instances, they may revert back to residential, but in a lot of cases where the properties are on properties that are rural resource or other similar zones, it may be prohibited to have it as a long-term rental because that's what the provisions of that zone dictate.
Thank you. And my final line of questioning then, Mayor, is on the 2nd of June, the Mercury reported the Premier saying that it was up to local councils to restrict the number of short-term rental properties if they felt that would increase housing affordability. And the quote from that Mercury article says, Mr. Gutwin said it was not the state government's job to cap short-term rental numbers, as that power was already in the hands of councils, end quote. My question is, do you have any comment on the Premier's assertion? Is it true that this power to cap short-term accommodation falls solely to councils? And second to that, has the council considered capping short-term accommodation properties similar to the attempts by Byron Shire Council?
Ms. Farmore.
Through you, Mayor, it wouldn't be as simple to cap the number of people with visitor accommodation, because we have to assess each application on its own merits. So if there's no grounds to refuse it, then you can't refuse it. If we did want to go down that, we would need to introduce some sort of policy or specific area plan that applies to the municipality that may have restrictions on it. Hobart City Council and the Battery Point, so the Flinders planning scheme do have restrictions in them, which is different to all the other public councils. We don't have that in place. And it's my understanding, although I'm not an expert on it, that it could be up to the state government to put controls in as well, which obviously they have the power to implement that through the planning schemes.
Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Grace, you've used the raise your hand tool, and I hope that means you've got a question.
I have two.
Thanks, Councillor Grace.
Hang on. My first question is, with this building non-compliance that the government brought on, and we have a huge number of those people, has it been extended or not? Because people are still receiving letters only Friday from the council, still giving them only to June to fix their problem.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, I'll have to take that question on notice and check whether the state government have indeed extended the timeframes given the COVID situation.
Thank you. As I understand, Mr. Mayor, we were told at a council meeting that they did. But I appreciate the fact that the General Manager will now undertake to give us something in writing. As to my second question, relating to the same issues, could the General Manager provide us with a list of people or the numbers of people that have been issued with these infringement notices for failing to comply, and why they are charged so much in costs?
Mr. Arnold, can you take that on notice?
And how many have been resolved? Thank you.
Is you happy to take that on notice, Mr. Arnold?
Oh, I'm happy to take that on notice, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions without notice from councillors? You're free to use the raise your hand tool or the conversation, or just unmute yourself and ask away. There appear to be no further questions without notice. In that case, we move on to questions on notice from councillors. First question on notice from councillors was from Councillor Westwood. That's on page 5. Second was from Councillor Cordova on zero tolerance of racism during COVID pandemic. And third is on roadside spraying. That's from Councillor Midgley with a response there on page 7. So with that, the open session of council is now adjourned, and the planning authority will commence at 5:49 p.m. Just a reminder to everyone that we are now sitting as a planning authority. The first and only item in the planning authority is PSA 2020-2, which is amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to formally incorporate supplementary documents as recommended motion on page 20. Would anyone like to move that?
I'll move that, Mayor.
Councillor Midgley moves. And seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of the amendment is to formally incorporate a list of supplementary documents in Appendix 1 of KAP S2015 and to update and correct reference to these documents through the text of the planning scheme. Mayor, it isn't something that I'm absolutely familiar with, so I'd actually be interested if we could hear from the council staff to provide us with a summary in regards to the purpose of this document. Just provide us some more background information if that would be possible, please.
Sure. Happy for any officer to... Ms. Tyler Moore, do you want to speak on this?
Through you, Mayor, the purpose of this amendment is to fix up Appendix 1 of the planning schemes. If anyone cares to look at the planning scheme, there's an Appendix 1 which lists incorporated and referenced documents. It's just a listing of documents that are referred to within the body of the scheme, either in the zones or overlay codes. All the ones that we're including in there were incorporated in the old planning scheme, the 2000 scheme. So when it went from the Kimber 2000 scheme over to the interim scheme, which is the one that we deal with now, it wasn't translated over to the scheme. It's evident this error occurred across a number of, most of the southern councils, where they're not listed in there. So there's nothing new being introduced. It's basically just a clerical error that we're seeking to correct. And we've had conversations with both the Commission and the Planning Policy Unit from the Department of Justice about this, and they're happy with the process of initiating and then considering it to go into the planning scheme.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So that provides us with background information and also understanding that this recommendation resolves to initiate the amendment at this stage.
Councillor Street is next and then Councillor Grace. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one question. With respect to the documents that we are requesting be included as supplementary documents, can staff just confirm for us that all of those documents have already been endorsed by council in the form in which they will be?
Councillor Street, is it me that's dropped out or is Councillor Street?
Councillor Street, but I got the question.
Why don't we wait and hopefully he comes back, because he's almost certainly not going to hear the answer. I'll go to Councillor Grace and then hopefully Councillor Street can rejoin us. Councillor Grace.
Am I unmuted now?
You are, Councillor Grace.
Thank you. Look, just as a bit of a Furby to me, I say, firstly, congratulations to the Kingborough Ratepayers Group, who I believe first raised so many errors. And I mean errors in the planning scheme. And you can read that throughout the report. Amendments would be required to fix the error. How many errors? The supplementary documents that my colleague Councillor Street spoke about, if I support this tonight, and the only reason that I will support this tonight is the fact that I want to write something that's not right, if you know what I mean, if you know where I'm coming from. And on page 19, 7.2, it says it is proposed for public exhibition to the planning scheme amendment for a minimum of 28 days for the public to be able to, it is proposed for the public exhibition. But again, I want to fully understand that the public exhibition that will take place won't be like And I know that he's somewhere with the Kingston High School. The former Kingston High School development plan on page 12. Is this again, I moved and redrew my previous decision on a planning decision on the former high school on the understanding that the public was going to have a full comprehensive public open consultation on that again. Now I'm led to believe that's not going to happen. I'm a little bit sceptical about this, Mayor. Can Council promise that the whole thing, including the supplementary documents, so in other words, I guess the documents that's going to be incorporated from the 2015 planning scheme into the new planning scheme, we need to be able to identify those fully, and the public need to fully understand them. Can you understand me where I'm coming from?
Councillor Grace, if I understand your current point, you're saying that as we transition to the new planning scheme, you want to make sure that there's consultation with members of the community about these incorporated documents as part of that process. Is that correct?
Yes, including us as councillors.
Yeah. So Ms. Tollemore, I feel like I've got a good answer, but you're the expert here. Would you like to answer this question?
Yes, through you, Mayor, just to respond to a few of the comments. The comment about there being lots of errors, it's just one error that occurred that the appendix wasn't filled in. Responsibility probably lay more with the state government when they transferred it over to the interim planning scheme. The comment about the high school matter, that is, they're two different matters. This is just putting in the existing one into the planning scheme, and it's only we're only talking about the current planning scheme, the 2015 scheme, not the Tasmanian planning scheme. The same comment goes for the other comments in relation to the new planning scheme and what has been agreed to previously or endorsed by councillors. That's also to do with the new scheme. This is just to go into the 2015 scheme. And the comments about the public exhibition, because this is a planning scheme amendment, this step tonight is just to initiate, so it's just the councillors agreeing that it gets sent to the planning commission, and then the planning commission, once they accept it, then it goes out into public consultation, same as what we just did with the hunting field rezoning. And then if there's submissions, it goes back to the planning commission for consideration and a possible hearing. So it's a fairly clerical amendment, this one, to fix up Appendix 1.
Whilst I understand that, Mayor, and I accept that, whilst I mention the high school was the fact that it is mentioned on page 12, but existing situations under the Kingsbury Interim Planning Scheme 2015 site development plan. I guess that's why I raised that particular issue, but as our planner and manager has told us that the old high school site has nothing to do with this. That's okay, accept that. And I will...
Sorry, if I could...
Mayor. Okay, we'll come back. I'll just let Councillor Grace complete his contribution. Councillor Grace.
Well, as long as it goes out to public consultation, and I hope Councillor Street may and other councillors may be able to put some other input into what I'm talking about, the supplementary documents, which is an important issue because they've got to be incorporated. So, we need to really know what those documents are, what they entail, because I don't think any one of us sitting around the table tonight could quote everything that's in the planning scheme in 2015.
Councillor Grace, you completed your contribution.
Well, I don't think there's any more I can add. I'm just interested now in summing up to the fact what other councillors think, Mayor.
Councillor, thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Street, so you asked the question, and we got most of the question through, and then you froze up, but I can't remember what it was, so perhaps you could start again.
I'll go again then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor. Just one question regarding the supplementary documents that we're seeking to have added to the planning scheme. Can staff please confirm that all of the documents that we're being asked to have added to the scheme as supplementary documents are all documents that we as council have already endorsed, and that there are no changes to those documents inherent in getting them added to the planning scheme as supplementary documents?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, I can confirm that they've all been endorsed by the council, either this council or previous sets of councillors. So there's no new ones introduced and no changes introduced.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Street. Are there any further questions or comments from councillors? Okay, that being the case, so the motion was, Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Well, thank you, Mayor. Just thank you, Councillor Grace and Councillor Street, for your questions. And thank you, Ms. Tyler Moore, for your response that we can confirm about these documents. Because as we do know, we're not planners sitting as councillors, and we don't know the planning scheme back to the front. So it is important for us to clarify and to ask those questions. So it is reassuring to know that we can confirm they've all been endorsed by the council or previously.
Thanks, Councillor Midgley. So the motion was moved by Councillor Midgley and it was seconded by Councillor Fox. And the motion is that A, pursuant to Section 34(1)(b) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council resolved to initiate Amendment PSA 2020-2 to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015. B, pursuant to Section 35 of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council certify that amendments PSA 2022 to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 meets the requirements of Section 32 of the former provisions of Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 and authorise the General Manager to sign the instrument of certification. C, pursuant to Section 38 of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council place Amendment PSA 2020 to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 on public exhibition for a period of at least 28 days following certification. All those in favour, if you could, in fact, I'll run through the list. I'm sure it's an important document. So if you can unmute yourself and I'll just run, ask each councillor by name if you can say yes if you agree with the motion and no if you don't. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox?
Yes.
Councillor Grace?
Yes.
Councillor Midgley?
Yes.
Councillor Street?
Yes.
Councillor Wass?
Yes.
Councillor Reid? Councillor Reid, we haven't heard a response at this stage. If you hear this, perhaps you could type it in the comments section. Oh. Councillor Reid is a yes through the comments. So the motion is carried unanimously. Okay, the next item. The planning authority session is now adjourned and the open session of council resumes at 6:04 p.m. Next item is notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion that had been received. Apparently, I was lost for a second. Hopefully, I'm back now. Did anyone miss anything? I've not. So the next item is, there were no notices of motion that had been received. The next item is petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. The next item is petition was received in the last period, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. So we move on to officers' reports to council. The first item is fees and charges for 2020-21. There's a recommended motion on page 26. Would any councillor like to move that recommended motion?
I'd like to move that, Mayor, with some changes to four of the planning fees, which would be to keep in line.
Hang on a second, councillor. We'll just, in line with the usual procedure, I'll just check to see if no one wants to move the recommended motion first, and if I don't have anyone, I'll come back to you to move a slightly different motion. Would anyone like to move the recommended motion?
I'd be happy to.
Councillor Fox.
Councillor Fox.
Looking for a seconder?
I'll second.
I didn't hear who that was, I'm sorry. Midgley, Councillor Midgley?
Yes,
excellent. Councillor Fox.
Well, it's a massive list of changes, and I guess I'd quite like to hear from staff to be able to summarise this document for us in a few seconds. I have no concerns. I'd be happy to hear how other councillors feel about the recommended changes or the way they're proposing to keep everything. So I'd quite like to hear any comments from councillors on the existing situation rather than considering changes first up. Thank you.
So, Councillor Fox, do you have a question? Is that... Am I directing staff to answer a question or...?
No, I don't have any specific question. Perhaps a quick summary of how we have arrived at this recommendation before us.
Okay.
In terms of charges and fees.
Look, I'm happy to try that because it's consistent with an earlier item. We did the same, but I just want to point out that we do have a report in front of us that does summarise things, and I suspect the Chief Financial Officer is about to tell us the things that are already in the report. But Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Essentially, the fees and charges, we went to the Council Budget Workshop going back 2 or 3 months ago. At that stage, generally we're increasing the rates in line with our past practice of 3%, with some particular fees and charges being benchmarked to other councils to determine where there was an opportunity for us to increase the fees beyond the 3%. Now, subsequently to that, councils passed a motion which restricted the increase of fees and charges to CPI, which on our review is 2.7%. So that's essentially what we've done here is we've benchmarked the fees and charges back to 2.7% increase, and that's the information that we're presenting to council today.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to Mr. Breen for this report. I agree that if we are indexing by CPI, then the appropriate percentage increase is 2.7%. That's the year average change in the year to March 2020 versus the year to March 2019, the most recent data available from the Australian Bureau of Statistics for Hobart. However, in reviewing these fees, I think we've missed a couple. There were four planning fees that council endorsed for review in December 2019 as part of the planning review. And the recommendation from that review, which council endorsed, was that council undertake a review of subdivision fees to ensure that they are reflective of the true cost to council of processing a subdivision application, and that council undertake a review of the planning scheme amendment fee to ensure that it is reflective of the true cost of processing a planning scheme amendment. So those fees did come to us in draft form to ensure that they were reflective of the cost of assessing those applications and the amendments. I think they might have just been missed off in the version that we've got in front of us. So I did send Ms. Morton a amended motion just to show the four fees and what they were last year and what the proposed increase was in the draft. And it was noted in that draft that the increase is the result of the planning review adopted by Council in December 2019. The increase in the fee is to better reflect the amount of work involved in these assessments. So I would like to either propose an amendment or ask whether the mover and seconder might agree to see the amendment.
I'd be happy to see those amendments, Councillor Westwood. That would be okay. Good.
So, Ms. Morton, if you wouldn't mind putting that up on the screen, and then I'll ask the mover and seconder following that whether they'd be happy to accept those changes. And now up on the screen. So I'll give you a second to have a read, Councillor Fox.
Could I comment?
Briefly. It's really
I'd just like to know why it's such a massive change from 4,000 to 7,000 for the amendment to the planning scheme. That's quite a major change, but apart from that, it seems quite logical. Perhaps Mrs. Tyler Moore could.
Yeah, good idea. Ms. Tyler Moore, can you explain these proposed changes?
Through you, Mayor, the proposed changes and the review of those two that increase significantly is as a result of the planning review and the recommendation by the author of the report. And we also did some calculations about anticipated costs for amendments, as an example, although it really does go in swings and roundabouts because some small ones can take a huge amount of officer hours. A big one might go straight forward, so it does go swings and roundabouts. But we did do an estimate of an average and also looked at some of the other fees that are around the state. So it's certainly not at the top and not at the bottom of the fees. So the changes back to CPI was just under direction that was the decision made by the council that it would only be CPI increase. So that's why the larger increases that you see in front of you were removed.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox, Councillor Westwood's asked if you're happy with that change. Are you comfortable?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thanks. Councillor Midgley, you were the seconder of this motion. Are you happy with that change?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, we'll now incorporate that in the motion. I'll wait a second to see if Ms. Morton can get that on the screen. And we have it on the screen, so it's now the motion. Councillor Westwood, would you like to continue?
Yes, I guess just for the benefit of other councillors who probably don't have the original draft in front of them, if I could just get Ms. Tyler Moore to confirm that they are the correct figures that council is potentially about to approve in the fees and charges for 2020-21.
Seeming correct in that they're consistent with the planning review or...?
As in consistent with the planning review and also consistent with the figures that councillors were provided in our original budget workshop.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the planning review didn't stipulate any numbers. They just said review the prices. And I actually don't have the original one in front of me to check it, but I believe that Mr. Breen, did review those, so perhaps they can confirm. We're not in the same room, so I can't see if he's nodding or not, but I don't have the original document in front of me to answer the question.
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor, yes, they are in line with the original figures that we had.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood. You have a contribution?
To say that, yes, we did endorse review of those fees as part of the planning review back in December, but also that I feel it is appropriate that we do increase these fees in line with the cost of providing that service. from our planning staff, and that I think indexing fees with CPI at 2.7% is appropriate on the whole, but when increases to fees relate to policy decisions of council, then I don't put those into the same boat.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood. So next I've got Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Grace. That's the order of which you advised me that you would like to speak. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. I support the amendment as written and I support the principle behind it, which is making sure that council is adequately remunerated for the work that goes into those things. My question was actually about the original motion vis-a-vis in the notes section. It says no increase due to rounding, and I just wanted an explanation of why some of the fees weren't increased due to rounding.
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Essentially what happens there is the fee increase will be less than a dollar. So if it's less than a dollar, we tend to not increase due to rounding.
That's great. That makes sense. Thank you very much, Mayor. That's all for me.
Councillor Grace.
I'm totally lost. I must say, I find it very, very difficult to read these documents, particularly the charges. I don't know whether it's my age or what, but I can certainly tell you now there's virtually very little, even in the planning fees and stuff, that I can actually read on these glasses that I have. Maybe, yes, you're right, or maybe I need new glasses, but it even gets worse as it goes on. What's brought before us now, what our Deputy Mayor is proposing, I totally disagree with. Deputy Mayor, we're trying to get as little increase in rates as possible this financial year to help people. I believe that the government and other bodies is going to spend an awful lot of cash down in our area to build housing. And we need to look at that and be mindful to reduce the rates. We have to be more efficient in our planning, decision making with our officers have to be more efficient. People don't mind paying extra fees, but we're not getting the value for them. So therefore, I think it's cynical that we increase these. For instance, this fee 36 amendment to planning scheme from 4,000 to 7. Deputy, through you, Mayor, what's it for? What is it?
Councillor Grace, the planning review that we did highlighted that council was actually was charging significantly less than other councils when it dealt with amendments to the planning scheme. So the proposal here is not to make us the highest charging, but put us about middle of the road and to better reflect the cost to council in dealing with amendments to the planning scheme. This is not mum and dad builders. Typically, amendments to the planning scheme are done by developers. For example, Mary Knoll being a recent example, Kingston Park, IMAS. So these are charges that are levied on usually large-scale developers, and the cost to increase from $4,000 to $7,000 in the scheme of a subdivision or a planning scheme amendment is very minimal, but it does help us to better attribute the costs and recoup some of those back to council.
I understand that, and that's more reason why I won't support it, because the fact is developers now have to provide a certain array of information to our council, fire permits in prone fire areas, all sorts of things. To increase this, and then they can put that to our, as I understand, but I'm probably getting off the track a little bit because I'm debating the planning the scheme itself, because I just find that this is it's ludicrous. We have to work a better system. And I don't know how many times over 20 years I have heard that we have to go in line with other councillors because we're well below other councillors. There's not too many things we are below on other councillors, and we shouldn't even be worried about other councillors. Our management should be smart enough to be able to put stuff forward at affordable rate for our own little community. And we don't need to increase this. I'm sorry, Deputy Mayor, but I can't support this.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. I don't have any other hands up or comments, but if anyone unmute yourself and yes, feel free to make a comment.
Yes, please.
Is that you, Councillor Loss?
Yes, it is. Loss. I've got several questions as we go through the fees, and I was hoping staff might be able to help me, Mayor. On page 28, under other fees, that's the second part of the development subdivision engineering fees, there's a fee for supply and install street signs within the municipality. And I'm wondering, what is the cost per sign? Why are we involved, and why isn't there a detailed template provided to the developer so they can arrange independently?
Mr. Reeve, or Mr. Brent, or whoever.
Through you, Mayor. I guess the signs come in different shapes and forms. So if they're a regulatory sign, then we normally get those directly from DSG. So that's probably one of the reasons behind that. If it's a street sign, then you're right, it can be just done by a template if necessary.
Yeah, well, yeah, it simply says, thank you, Mayor, it simply says supply and install street sign. And that was, I just thought, something that we could A, delete, and B, not become involved if we so determined. If I move on, there is another question or two that I have. And the first one is on page 32, under education, thermometer purchase. What is a thermometer purchase and why do we charge $36 each?
Mr. Breen, or most appropriate member of staff.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, I will have to take that one on notice, the answer to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. I assume we buy them for someone, but why? Again, I suppose, is I'm coming to. My next question.
I might have some idea, but I'm not sure if I can comment. But I know with food premises, it's important that the temperatures are kept at a certain level to avoid salmonella and other nasties in food. And this section is under environmental health. And I presume that that would be for food handlers to make sure that their food is kept at a minimum temperature for health reasons.
If I may continue, Mayor. My
sure.
Next question are on page 41. We're talking about the fitness centre, and also on page 42. I'm a little bit disappointed there's no participation numbers to go with these fee charges. What sports are doing well and what are struggling, I guess, is the questions, and we won't get an answer before we set that. And years gone by, we've always had an indication of participation numbers. And certainly our aim should be to get people active and keep them doing so rather than perhaps charging a sport that is struggling and needs some assistance to get numbers there. And unfortunately, we don't have the sports manager there, so I guess that question won't be answered, but I would be interested in what Mr. Breen might like to add.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I think that would be something we'd have to take on notice and get some information back to Councillor Watts.
Thank you. On page 43, a pensioner health care card for dogs not sterilised. And we've come up with a figure here. I'm just wondering why the pensioner rate is not half the entire dog fees, which means it would represent a 50% value for a pensioner. In other words, why have it at 38 when it should be, in my opinion, $51?
Councillor Watts, what page is this on?
Page 43.
Mr. Green, do you have a response?
No, I'll have to take that on notice as well.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I haven't got too many more questions, Mayor. I think one maybe. That's it. Yes, one. And that is on page 47. Towing of abandoned vehicle. We've taken it from 125 to 128. We talk about covering costs. I'm just wondering how many vehicles we tow in a year, what the real cost is, and should this fee tonight be included to, say, $200? I mean, if someone's prepared to leave a vehicle there and not inform the police or council that they are undertaking that clearing, that towing, rather, of that vehicle in the next few days, why are we spending all the time for, I would say, not covering costs?
Mr. Breen or Mr. Reeve, even Mr. Smee, I suppose.
Mayor, I can answer that. The fee is set on an average cost recovery basis. Certainly, we do look to fully recover our costs in relation to this matter, and that fee that has been proposed by staff, some instances it will be more, sometimes it'll be less, but on average that works out at cost recovery.
That being the case, Mayor, is it time that we review the average cost? That average cost might have been done a number of years ago, or it might have been just done recently as a one cost, and I'd like to think that we would review it over a series of years to see whether or not we are in fact meeting a full cost recovery.
Mr. Smee.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Certainly in the setting of our fees and charges, we do review whether we are achieving that cost recovery, and certainly the figure that has been suggested in the current round of fees and charges has been recently reviewed.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. That's all the questions, Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Are there any further comments or questions from councillors at this stage?
Mayor, can I just clarify? The charges we're debating now about the increase and subdivision increase, et cetera, was that an amendment from the Deputy Mayor?
So the Deputy Mayor asked the mover and seconder, being Councillor Fox and Councillor Midgley, if they'd be prepared to change the motion, and they agreed. So the motion is as on the screen, but it is different to what's in the agenda.
Okay. Without needing to vote on.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any further questions or comments? Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, councillors, for your questions. I presume that having those questions answered on notice will satisfy the people who are interested in the detail, but I'm hoping that everybody will support the motion and the amended motion, and that we can move forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Fox. So the motion was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley, and the motion is that Council adopts the attached fees and charges schedule for the 2020-21 financial year with the following changes to planning fees. Fee 15, subdivision increasing from $689 to $758. Fee 16, plus per proposed lot, including balance lot, increasing from $161 to $177. Fee 36, amendment to planning scheme from $4,016 to $7,028. Fee 37, urgent planning scheme amendment from $464 to $580, which are in keeping with the Council's adoption of the planning review in December 2019. I'm going to go through the list, councillors, so if you please unmute yourselves, ready to respond. Councillor Westwood.
Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace.
Hello.
Yes, Councillor Grace. Are you a yes in favour of the motion or a no, not in favour?
No.
No. Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street.
Yes.
Councillor Wass.
Yes.
Councillor Reet. Same problem as before, Councillor Reet. Perhaps you can type it in the chat. Not sure how you're going to. Thank you, Councillor Reed has also typed yes into the chat bar. I'll take that as a yes vote in these unusual times. Councillor Winter is also a yes, which means that the motion is carried 9-1. Next item. Next item is the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit 2020. There's a recommendation on page 52. Councillor Cordova would like to move. Anyone like to second?
Second.
Second by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you so much, Mayor, and thank you especially to Mr. Donnelly and the authoriser of this report. This here is the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit 2020, and the purpose of this report is to present the results and findings of said audit. Importantly, this audit is not a playground safety audit or a maintenance audit. Rather, it has been designed and undertaken to assess the condition of each play space in relation to the benchmarks and actions outlined in the strategy and to identify possible improvements for each play space in line with the strategy. I am very confident in the report that's before us, that it is comprehensive and that it is very detailed. And it's, I think, a wonderful indication of the commitment that this council has to recreational spaces and beautification of the neighbourhood and a place for all young people and old people alike to get out into the great outdoors. Some of the highlights for me personally, Mayor, are that the Taruna Park and associated individual play space components have been upgraded to sub-regional classification in order to adequately reflect the importance, size and complexity of the playscapes and parkland settings. This will facilitate future development of Taruna Park as a single, unified, coordinated precinct. I'm also very excited to see that Rotary Centennial Park, Ducks Playground, is upgraded from classification of local urban to district classification to reflect that site's strategic significance and high visitation. And also I'm very pleased to know that Kettering Hall Playground has been upgraded to district classification. And this is particularly exciting because there's that adjacent exercise precinct and skate park, so this will facilitate future development of the play space and parkland setting at Kettering Hall and Oval as a single, unified, coordinated precinct. In my previous work for the Heart Foundation, I realised full well that having healthy places is really important to encourage a healthy by design lifestyle and to make sure that young people learn fundamental movement skills and are able to enjoy the great outdoors and also get habituated to a healthy lifestyle and to enjoy a special time with their friends and family. Something, I guess, that I reflect on going through this COVID crisis is that for those of us who have been lucky enough to get through it without undue hardship, it's also meant that we've had a little bit more time to spend time with loved ones and with families, and I've got to see my nephews a lot more often than I usually do, and Kingborough should be very proud of its play spaces, but as this report recognises, we have a long way to go, and I'm so pleased to see that we have a very comprehensive plan of how to get there and what needs to be done to make sure that Kingborough has the very best play spaces in the state, and we're certainly striving towards that, in my humble opinion. So I want to thank Mr. Donnelly once again, and I commend this report to the Council. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. At this stage, I don't have any indication from other councillors they'd like to speak, but so you can unmute if you'd like to. Councillor Wass.
Thank you. Look, it's a very comprehensive report, and I appreciate that. I would, however, on behalf of the people in Blackmans Bay, particularly along Lomo Close, They have been calling for an upgrade of that park for over 30 years and haven't got anywhere. The report on page 148 or page 91 of the report, Kingborough Park Space, certainly indicates that's long overdue, and I would ask that staff give consideration to doing something at Alamo Close. Otherwise, the grandchildren who are there now will also be parents or even grandparents when we finally get to it. Thank you, Mayor.
So next, I believe I have Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I haven't much to say again, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to point out that I find it difficult to read the comments in the report. They're a bit small for me again. I don't know if other councillors are having trouble reading them. Like Councillor Wasp, I have some issues regarding Drew Point, and I couldn't read everything that was said about Drew Point. But I think it's a good good challenge for us as councillors, not only us at City Now. I think this document should be framed each financial year and discussed through the budget so that we get priorities right. And that's one reason, Mayor, while I'll support, even though I can't read it all, but I will support the document. Did you?
Yes, thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I think this is an exceptional report. There's an incredible amount of detail that's gone into it. I'm wondering if it will be available on Council's website at all for other people in the community to view?
Yes, it will.
That's fantastic. So just for those at home, there's a full index of every play space in Kingborough, and there is a checklist of each of those places, and then a review that was done in person of each of the playgrounds against a framework checklist. I was quite surprised to read in the report that 80% of Kingborough's play spaces do not currently provide an acceptable level of play value and landscape amenity as defined by the strategy. So I was actually quite surprised. I know that a lot of our playgrounds aren't as new as they could be, but certainly when you look through at the photos that have documented each space in terms of landscaping design, I think they look really well maintained. Besides the fact that some of the infrastructure is ageing, which can be addressed, as Councillor Grace alluded to, as part of our annual budget process. So I'm really pleased that that Council is taking a really good look at all of our playgrounds. And, yeah, I think it's been a really nice shift that I've seen happen over the last couple of years. I did just have one question about whether any of our existing play spaces have, I guess, been recommended for removal. I know sometimes there are some smaller places that aren't as well maintained, and I'm just wondering whether as part of this audit any of those were recommended to be decommissioned, for lack of a better word. That's a question.
Mr. Donnelly. Mr. Donnelly. Or Mr. Smee.
Sorry, my apologies. Through you, Mayor. The report does not recommend decommissioning of any embellished play spaces, although it was a hypothesis that was given consideration at the outset of conducting the audit, that there may be a need to decommission some play spaces. That has not been the result of the audit. In many cases, an embellished play space will score poorly where elements like footpaths, which give accessibility, or shade, either through shade structures or shade tree planting, is missing from the playscape. So they're often the elements that we see are missing, and often a weak score or a low score can be attributed to those particular elements of a play space. I hope that answers your question adequately, Councillor Westwood.
Yes, it does. Thank you. And I just had one more question about park names. So I noticed some parks are named and some aren't. For example, we recently named the new snug play space the Ashton Dennehy Park. What's the criteria for a park having a name or not? And if there is a significant local member of the community who might be acknowledged, how does the community go about putting forth an idea like that?
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. In terms of naming conventions for play spaces, I might perhaps defer to Mr. Smee to give more detail in that respect, but the strategy that has been endorsed by councillors does actually talk about naming and placemaking signage as a valuable aspect of playground identity. So the strategy does address that aspect, and it does support increased placemaking outcomes through signage and through place naming. So those particular site-specific considerations that you mentioned in Snug with the Ashton Dennehy Memorial Playground would be supported under the strategy that is endorsed.
Mr. Smee, can you add to that answer?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Certainly we don't have a formal policy in relation to this matter. Previous instances have come from community members approaching council, and then staff have prepared a report for council's consideration. So I guess there's one of two ways to go in the future. We could actually try and frame a policy around this, or we could just continue to deal with cases on an individual basis. To date, we've had very few requests from the community for naming of playgrounds, but certainly, as Mr. Donnelly indicated, there is scope for that under the framework, and it's something that we can give consideration to further in the future.
Thank you. That's all from me. I think it's an absolutely really, really wonderful report. And I thank you very much, Mr. Donnelly.
Okay, next I have Councillor Midgley, then followed by Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Like others have spoken and shared, it is really an exceptional report, and we're really lucky to have this thorough analysis of our playgrounds, which there are quite a few that I did not know existed, and perhaps some of the names, as Councillor Westwood mentioned, in regards to the one in Firthside, like I just would never have guessed that the one in Firthside was named the one that it is. Perhaps there's a bit of history about that one that I'll need to dig around and find out. It's really important that we place the value of play and recreation high on our council agenda. It is one of the Article 31 of the Rights of the Child, so it is a really important matter for council to consider. And I thank Mr. Donnelly, who I did see once when I was during isolation taking photographs of the park, and it was a great time for him to be able to do that where there was no people in the park, and to be able to have a thorough audit of that. I actually have a few questions, Mayor, and one of the ones as well was in regards to the website. I understand we will be putting some of the details onto the website, but I'm just wondering, in regards to a map of existing of where our actual playgrounds are and what sort of details we are going to put on the website, I'd like to find out a bit more what that sort of entails and looks like.
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. The intention is to both publish the audit document in full on the website, but the intention is also to build, if you like, a web page for each individual play space and publish that to the website, which would include information around the facilities available in a particular play space. It would include site images to give people a better indication of the condition of the play space, what sort of equipment is available, what sort of shade is available, and the landscape setting that the play space is located within. It would also include information relating to the location of the play space. We do currently have an interactive Google-based map hosted on the website, which includes the location of a particular suite of play spaces. So we would look to expanding on that map, building on the data that's already embedded within that map, and then that map would provide a link to the homepage for each play space, as I've described.
Thank you very much. That sounds great. People can do a tour of Kingborough playgrounds, I'm sure. A couple of other questions, just in regards to the toilets, public amenities, in regards to the checklist. And I note there's a grading in regard, you know, the point scoring, I guess, in regards to if it has a toilet or not. I'm just wondering, due to this audit framework checklist, if perhaps there could be sort of a community expectation that we might be putting toilets in all of our playgrounds, and how do we ensure that, of course, you know, the smaller parks in the areas will not have public amenities, but in the larger areas they will. So how do we ensure, I guess, that we don't raise any community expectations if we put this full audit list on the website?
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. The framework checklist includes a note about whether or not public toilet facilities are provided at a space, really as a kind of a reminder. The most important thing to come out of that is a record of whether or not we currently have public toilet facilities installed at a particular play space. The strategy, the play space and playground strategy, which was endorsed previously, outlines whether or not we expect to see a public toilet facility located in conjunction with a particular classification of play space. So the strategy has specified that we would expect to see public toilet facilities in our district and above play spaces. So that would include district, sub-regional and regional play spaces. That's largely the case across the suite of play spaces on the ground today. However, there may be, because of the legacy that we've inherited of play spaces and their development over time, there may be an instance where we have, for example, a local level play space that may have a public toilet connected with it for whatever reason. It may be because the local hall is located directly adjacent. So the strategy, the framework checklist, sorry, includes a note about public toilets to make sure that we're capturing those instances. But most definitely, the strategy is what sets out the expectation, and we would refer customers to that document. And it should also be noted that Council's public toilet strategy would be the would be considered the overriding overarching document that would inform where we expect to see public toilet facilities going forward.
Thank you. And a question on water fountains. It's something that I have raised and community members have raised to me regarding if there could be more water fountains in parks. As we can see by the audit list, we're really lacking in Kingborough, and it is a really important thing, especially if we're encouraging you know, people to bring their own water bottles and things. What have we given any sort of thoughts in regards to how perhaps we can partner with someone to install water fountains? Just wondering what we've looked at in regards to that.
Mr. Donnelly.
Through you, Mayor. Water fountains are considered an essential universal design or inclusive design outcome. So what we mean by water fountains is a drinking fountain or a bubbler, as opposed to a water feature, for example. So water fountains provide playground users with the opportunity to refill their bottle, take a quick sip, and what that does is that allows playground users to remain in situ for a longer period of time, so extend their visit to a playground. That then gives us increased play value and usage outcomes within our play spaces, and also adds to the level of vibrancy within play spaces. So from an urban design perspective, drinking fountains are considered quite important. However, there are financial considerations, and there are also practical considerations that need to be considered. On a site-by-site basis, we may not have plumbing to a particular site, for example, at least of potable water. So we would take all that into consideration when deciding whether or not to install a drinking fountain in a particular play space. We also do look actively at alternative strategies to fund drinking fountains where possible. For example, drinking fountains may be sponsored by an interested stakeholder or community stakeholder, for example, a dental health practitioner. There are ways of working with community stakeholders in order to achieve these outcomes. But just to sum up, drinking fountains are considered an essential ingredient, and the strategy does outline that and look to increasing the number of drinking fountains within our play spaces.
Thank you very much. Just one more point, Mayor, and then a quick question in regards to the Bruning Island playgrounds. And again, noting, as Councillor Westwood said, and it's actually written in the poor report regarding the 80% of Kingborough's play spaces do not currently provide an acceptable level of play. We can see that obviously as well in regards to Bruning Island. It would be great, perhaps, when we are talking Bruning Island funding at a state and federal level in the future, if we can actually remember our playgrounds, because they are an important stopping place for families when they do go to visit Bruning Island. So as well as sealing of the roads, let's put playgrounds on that list as well. The other quick question was just in regards to points that were raised regarding the budget process and the playgrounds. I just a quick sort of summary, and would be interesting, Mayor, to find out. So if we have this audit, we have the information, how do we classify and work out, like, which is actually, I'm sorry if I have missed this, like, which is the highest priority for Council to work towards retrofitting or replacing equipment and things like that?
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. We would make these decisions on a site-by-site basis, and that might occur through community representation. It might occur through a representation made by a particular councillor. It might occur through an identification made by a member of staff. That site identification would then be reviewed in relation to the overview of play spaces and the ranking that that play space has been given under the audit process. You would look at the ranking. Say, for example, the play space is ranked number 15. You would then cross-check that with the note relating to acceptable condition. It may be an unacceptable or it may be an acceptable condition. You would review the rank against the condition note, make a decision about whether or not they align. So, for example, a ranking of number of 15 is considered high priority. The actual condition note, if it was, for example, acceptable, would indicate that there are some values within the play space that may be some elements or pieces of infrastructure that may be redeeming what is otherwise missing from the play space. Then we would undertake a landscape analysis. We would visit the site, we'd document the site in more detail, and we would move towards developing a playground action plan in partnership with the local community. So there'd be a process that would be followed for each individual site as it comes up and as it is identified.
Thank you very much, and thank you again, Mr. Donnelly, for your fantastic work. It's really great to have you at Council.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox, then Councillor Bastine. Councillor Fox, have we got you?
Sorry, I thought I was on microphone. I started speaking. I'm looking at 4.4 on page 51, which says that the audit is intended to inform decisions about maintenance, planning, design and funding allocations. And I'm concerned how, I'd like to ask a question, how does this report link with the public open space funding, particularly in relation to areas which have absolutely no playgrounds? For example, Howden and Longley. I mean, it's a great report summarising and auditing what we do have, but not what we don't have. That's question one. And the other question I have is the report based, does it have any relevance to the amount of usage that each place area has? And how frequently they need to be maintained on the basis of usage, and whether they are in need of improvements because they're getting so heavily used. So they're my two basic questions. Thank you.
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Fox, for your questions. The first question in relation to what we don't have. So you're correct. The audit is an audit of the assets that we have on the ground at the moment. It's not an audit of playground assets that we are planning to build would like to build. So in relation to what we don't have, we would then look to the playground and play space strategy document to give us an indication of what the expectations are. So you would refer to the document. We would have a discussion around the classification for a new play space based on its location and its settlement context and its landscape context. So a possible play space would be applied a classification. We would then move through the framework checklist within the strategy to understand more in terms of what the strategy expectations are. We'd then move to a site analysis. We'd then move to community consultation. So there's a process that we would move through to design and plan new playground assets. In relation to the second part of your question, which was around usage of our playground sites. So yes, the audit does make a record of usage. And one of the first questions in the framework checklist is whether or not the space looks well used. And that information, which is recorded during a site visit, is also overlaid with information that we know about the site. We may know, for example, that a particular site is very well used based on community feedback, based on feedback that the development services, works department, parks and reserve team supply to myself, for example. And the strategy document also refers to usage in relation to the classification. So the classifications take into consideration things like usage. So, for example, one of the major differentiators between a local suburban and a local township play space is precisely usage, whether or not the play space is used intensely on a regular basis or whether or not it is used occasionally. So in where we have occasional use, it's most likely classified a local township space. Where we do have a small local playground that does get intense use, it would be applied the suburban classification.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox. Next, I have Councillor Westine.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if I realise that this is an audit of the play space and playground, but I'm just wondering when Mr. Donnelly went round and photographed these, and he was lucky enough to be able to see a lot of them during the COVID-19 time without anyone there, whether he noticed equipment that was substandard or that he felt was no longer appropriate in playgrounds, and has he done anything about that? Thank you.
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Bastone. Although this audit is not a safety audit, Council does undertake safety audits through a separate process. I did review the playground equipment that was in situ at each play space, and in instances where I did consider there was an issue that needed to be addressed, that is recorded in the audit, and it's often highlighted in yellow, and that information was relayed directly to the Works Department for actioning through our busy asset processes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next I have, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have one further quick question. It was in regards to the use of smart technology. I understand we don't have any sort of smart technology on our gates and things like that to actually really measure and count how many people are using our playgrounds, but is that at all something that we might be considering in the future, especially in regards to helping with maintenance and the costing associated with upkeep and things of the playgrounds?
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. We do occasionally utilise counters, for example, which are considered a form of smart technology. So the Parks and Reserve team have in the past installed counters at particular play spaces to record visitation to confirm a suspicion that, for example, a play space is getting extremely high or excessively high usage. So I do believe those activities have been previously undertaken on a case-by-case basis in the past. The playground strategy doesn't necessarily make a specific reference to smart technologies in our play spaces, but that does not preclude the inclusion of smart technologies or smart technology outcomes in our play spaces going forward.
Thank you.
If any further comments or questions in relation to this? That being the case, the motion, I should ask Councillor Cordo, would you like to sum up?
Yes, thank you so much, Mayor. I will be very brief, but there are a few things in this important, constructive and positive discussion that we've just had that I want to bring to the fore to make sure that they're not lost. We had a great discussion about the naming of play spaces, and I think we do indeed need some clarity, maybe a formal policy around that, because what a great way to recognise very important people or things in the community. So I think that formal policy around naming is important. We've also heard about the website, and I'll draw everybody's attention to Clause E of the recommendation that hopefully we're about to pass, that we're going to see on our website some fantastic things, a photographic inventory, list of facilities available, site images and other related information. And I really look forward to hearing community feedback when people look at the from pages 17 to 24 of the report and see that fantastic photographic inventory and the framework and scoring that's associated with that. I really don't want to lose Councillor Grace's point about accessibility of these reports. So if there are difficulties reading these reports, and I also note that for my own personal situation, I find it difficult that they're not searchable. So if we are going to have digital reports, I would strongly recommend that we have some OCR or that they're actually just copied in the same way that the rest of our agenda is so that we can read them. We shouldn't have inaccessible reports. So I thought that was a really important point. I've loved that there has been really constructive discussion around the important facts about equal geospatial access to playgrounds. So, for example, on Bruny Island, recognising that playgrounds are an important stopping ground, and so resealing of roads is very, very important, and also so too is improving our play spaces. And I think the robust discussion we've had around some of the things that really do desperately need work on our playgrounds has been very valuable. I was really pleased to hear about equipment improvements being forwarded to the Works Department, so there's a kind of subsidiary benefit of going through this audit process as well, in addition to this wonderfully comprehensive report that Mr. Dolomilly has prepared. And I also just wanted to finish off by saying that I have really enjoyed the fact that this report has a focus on inclusive design and improved usage outcomes. It's one of those examples of Council doing something that is outcomes focused and that is long term in its vision. There's a great body of work still to be done, and I look forward to progressing that with my Council colleagues and with Council staff. But playgrounds fundamentally are important for bringing families together. They're important not just for parents and for children, but they're important for grandparents. And they're important for those young people of our community to help them learn, to help them have fun, to help them stay healthy, and to help them thrive. And one of the key markers of a great community is the quality and the thought that has gone into its inclusive play spaces. So once again, I thank the author, the authoriser, and I commend the report to the council.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Cordova. It was seconded by Councillor Minchley. And the motion reads that A, the activities and results of the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit be noted. B, the findings of the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit be endorsed. C, the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit 2020 be published to the Council's website. D, information about the audit activities and results be promoted via appropriate communications channels in accordance with Council's communications and engagement policy, and E, appropriate web page content be developed for publication to Council's website that includes for each play space and playground. There's items 1 through to 4 there. Then F is the asset register be updated to reflect the findings of the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Audit 2020, including play space and playground classifications as presented. And that's it, I believe. I read it all? Yes. Okay, I'm going to run through the list of councillors. If you could unmute yourself. Yes, if you agree, and no, if you don't. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Grace.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street. Councillor Street. Councillor Watts.
Yes.
Councillor Reet. Councillor Reet might need to use the chat bar again. Councillor Reet says yes via the chat bar. Councillor Street, I haven't heard from. Either use the chat bar or speak now. Councillor Street is also a yes. Councillor Winter is also a yes, which means the motion is carried unanimously. It's now 7:05 p.m, which is about time for a break, I think. Given that, I will now we'll take a break until 7:15 p.m, which is 10 minutes. So all members of our Facebook audience, we'll be right back with you in 10 minutes, and we'll see you shortly. Okay, apologies, I'm 1 minute late. So just want to check whether Ms. Wilcox could let me know when we are, or if we are back and on streaming. And I've got a thumbs up, which means that we are back online, thanks to members of the community who are watching on Facebook for your patience. I just want to start by going to the next item, which starts on page 177 of our council agenda. It's called Green Waste Vouchers. There's a recommended motion on page 181. Would anyone like to move the recommended motion?
I would. Yeah, I would.
Okay, Councillor Grace would like to move. Anyone like to second?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Second by Councillor Fox. Thank you. Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace, you're on mute.
Sorry, Mayor. That's okay. Tricky.
Your camera's also off. Just so you're.
Yes. Do you want that on?
No, it's fine. I'm just letting you in case you didn't know. That's fine. Okay. It's your choice entirely. Thanks, Councillor Grace.
No, that's right. I'm too good a looking to let too many people look at me, Mayor.
That's all right.
I'm happy with this. Again, we seem to have a problem with burning off in our municipality, and this is the only avenue to allow people to get rid of their green waste. So I don't think there's many councils that won't support this, if any, because we've talked about it so many times.
or spoke about it. She was Yeah, I'm finished.
Oh, okay, right. Very good. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox, would you like to make a contribution?
Yes, I just want to point out that there's in the report it states that there's little risk in maintaining the status quo as regards the provision of two free green waste weekends for 2020 to 2021, and this will encourage the reduction of fuel loads for all residents and could be timed to better coincide with the peak spring and summer periods. Increasing the level of service for green waste, for free green waste disposal through additional free green waste weekends and or a voucher system may encourage reduced fuel loads, but may also have a risk of being perceived as unaffordable with the current financial restraints associated with the COVID-19 crisis. And that is the reason why I support this recommendation. I realise that the community has been asking for vouchers or for extra services from council, but maintaining the status quo is probably the best option at this point in time. And hopefully we can review the situation as conditions return back to normal. Thank you.
So I have Councillor Cordova saying he would like to move. Councillor Cordova, I'll let you speak for yourself. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor, but I note that Councillor Westwood has a question. If it's on the original motion, I'm happy either way. Do you want me to go or do you
good
want
idea.
To go?
That's a good idea. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. My question, it doesn't really matter when I ask it. It was about the voucher system, and I know there's six different options presented here, but in terms of offering vouchers, how would we ensure the integrity of a system like that so that the vouchers weren't transferable to residents outside our municipality or couldn't be used more than the intended number of times?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, look, other councils have used a variety of different methods to do that. So some actually use the rates notice. Some of them actually put a special QR code on the rates notice so you can actually scan off there as well at the same time there, which would probably be the easiest thing to actually do. I guess the main thing would be to actually ensure that the vouchers were actually getting used for the right thing, as you say. So that's always the risk associated with vouchers, that people will use them as a tradable commodity. So I would suggest that the QR code seems to be the best way to actually go about it.
Okay, Greg to Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I propose to move an amendment that adds 10.2, will reconsider a green waste voucher system as part of next year's budget discussions. So it would add the words that council will reconsider a green waste voucher system as part of next year's budget discussions.
Ms. Morton, I believe you've got a forward copy of this. You ought to put it on the screen. I think there's a... Oh, yeah, it looks like... Sorry. You're onto it.
I'm happy to second that, Mayor. I'm just wondering if Councillor Cordova would, instead of saying for next financial year, potentially say for the 2021-22 financial year, just to be clear which financial year he's referring to.
Yes, I'm happy with that.
Okay. Instead of moving amendment, let's check with Councillor Grace and Councillor Fox whether they're happy with it. Councillor Grace, are you happy with this proposed change?
Yes, I think the Deputy Mayor jumped in, but that's okay, Deputy Mayor. I'll forgive you. yes, I'm happy with that.
I'm also happy with that. I think that's a reasonable thing to be asking, and it's basically what I alluded to when I spoke. Thank you.
Sorry. Great. Councillor Cordova, would you like to contribute to continue with your contribution?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to the mover and seconder for accepting that amendment. This motion, I'm getting a bit of feedback, so if people could put themselves on mute, that'd be great. I think that there's a huge community appetite for a green waste voucher system, and I recognise that there were several caveats put in the report, which to me indicated a kind of worst case scenario, that is assuming a 100% take-up rate, also assuming that it was a provision that was given to all properties rather than just restricting things to properties, as mentioned, over 4,000 square metres, which I assume was reasonable. Also, we probably do need a bit more specificity around whether having free green waste days or weekends is mutually exclusive with having a green waste voucher system. So there are still some elements that I think require more discussion. But the fact remains that there is enormous community appetite. We know now that it's done elsewhere quite easily, that a rates notice can go out with a QR code attached to it quite simply. And if we can find out what the uptake rate is at other councils with similar systems, I think we'll find that the enormous community benefit would not just be in terms of the financial savings to the ratepayers who otherwise would have to pay this, but the savings will be to our community who are helping us mitigate bushfire risk, which at the end of the day, maintaining a safe and vibrant community is fundamentally important. But it would also, I think, engender a great deal of community goodwill, because this is something that certainly in my short time on council, I've already heard many, many people talking to me about this. So it's something that I think we can do. It's something that we should do. And if the appetite in the community for it is not going away, then I can assure other councillors that my intention to continue progressing this idea has not gone away either. So I want to thank the author and the authoriser of the report, and I look forward to working cooperatively to progress this idea when our financial situation is a bit more clear. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just wondering how, because we're starting the green waste collection in January, how this is going to actually alter the desire of people to have the free weekends. And I would think there would be less people using the free weekends, and therefore it might be easier to bring in the green waste vouchers for those of us who do not have the opportunity to have green waste collected. Could you comment on that, please, Mr. Reeve?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I guess that's the advantage of actually reconsidering this again next financial year, where we'll have the benefit of actually having the green waste curbside collection service being run for 9 months there. So there may be some sort of pattern we can actually pick up from that. It does need to be realised there that the green waste bin itself, they will only generally take the smaller type branches and grass clippings there as compared to some of the larger type loads that would normally come into Beretta on the free green waste weekend. So it's a slightly different type of green waste that's actually coming in. However, we can still actually have a look at that over the next 9 months or so and just see if there is a pattern there.
Councillor Bastone, you're on mute. I'm sorry, I had to mute you. You're on mute, sorry, Councillor Bastone.
Sorry.
I'll just to let you know, I'm just having to do
because I don't have the earphones.
Yes,
apologies.
Yes.
The other thing is I'm unhappy about rescheduling to November and January. I understand it's to stop the fuel load later, but for instance, at the moment, we're pruning heavily a large number of fruit trees and lots of people on 400 square metre blocks are doing the same. It is now that we need to be doing a lot of dumping. So I think it's a shame to take away the free disposal weekend that was around this time of the year. What are we going to do with all our clippings between now and November? Thank you.
Mr. Reeve, do you want to answer that?
Look, I'm not sure that I can comment any further on that, Mayor. I mean, I guess there's many different times of year that you could actually run a free green waste weekend, and if you running multiple ones there, then you obviously have a lot more scope to actually spread that out across the year. It's difficult to determine when people will actually do their pruning. We do know that when we do run the free green waste weekends there, we get a reasonable influx of people actually using it. So normally 3 to 4 times as many people as would normally use on a normal day, regardless of what time of year it actually is. And we have tried a few different times of the year. This is just a way of, I guess, trying to capitalise on some of those key growing times there.
Thanks, Mr. Reeve. Don't have anyone else lined up at this point to speak.
I have a question, Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is, when we talk about increasing free green waste weekends at Bruny Island and Bretta, so I'm looking at 4.3A on page 179 of my agenda, it says that that option would cost, it would incur an extra $17,000 expense to council. And I just want to clarify for all those people listening, is that an opportunity cost expense or is that an actual expense? Are you saying that it's the cost of the revenue that we would recuperate if people had to pay the fee, or is it an actual expense that we have to pay? Is that question clear?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So that's actually a bit of both. So there is an actual expense to council there in terms of doing that. So part of it's to do with actually the recuperation of the actual fees coming in. Part of it's to do with actually the cost of actually dealing with the additional loads as they come into the site as well. So a little bit of both.
Sorry, Mayor, is there any indication on what proportion... What's the percentage of opportunity cost and what's the percentage of actual cost?
Mr. Reeve.
Yep, through you, Mayor. So the substantial proportion would be to do with the actual opportunity cost as compared to the actual cost.
Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Westwood, you've said you'd like to speak. I felt like you might have spoken already, though. Perhaps you just...
I think I only asked a question.
Okay.
I meant to only ask a question.
All right. Maybe work on your questions a little more. Thanks, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just wanted to touch a bit on the fact that we call these free green waste weekends. They're not free, as Councillor Cordova and Mr. Reeve have just spoken about. They do cost money and they are subsidised by all ratepayers, as opposed to, I guess, issuing vouchers which would be equitable. It would give every resident an equal opportunity to potentially use a voucher at any time of the year when they chose, which might also address Councillor Bastone's issue. So I guess I would like to see us revisit this when we have some more information and perhaps when our budget is in a better situation. I just note on the screen at 10.2, I'm pretty sure Councillor Cordova means that we would consider a green waste voucher system for the 21-22 financial year, which means that we would consider it a roughly this time next year for that following financial year. I guess just to check, Councillor
Cordova. Ms. Morton, do you mind changing that to 2021/22 because that's in line with Councillor Cordova suggested next financial year, which is 21-22. You happy with that, Councillor Cordova?
That's fine. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And then just to continue, getting back to the using the word free, is there any way we can rename the weekends to call them something about bushfire preparedness? Potentially, the council maintains the number of bushfire preparedness weekends and reschedules the events to November and January, maybe?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, we could certainly turn our mind to that. I mean, I'm sort of the same mind as Councillor Westwood. There's, I don't really like that terminology either, because it's probably providing a bit of a false interpretation of what the situation is. So I will probably confer with our comms officer and come up with something there which might be a bit more appropriate.
Thank Mr. Reeve, would you need a change to the motion in order for you to do that, or could you just do that autonomously, either through the KWS board or yourself?
Through you, Mayor. I can just do that autonomously.
That's very good.
Thank you. That's my contribution.
Anyone else like to speak? Look, Councillor Grace, is that you?
Yeah, do you want me to close it?
No, I was just going to briefly speak and say, look, the report is very good. It's very thorough. I've been sort of pushing to get this report through a bit earlier, but I can see now why it took a little while, because there's a lot of research that's gone into it, including what we've got about a dozen different councils across the country and looking at different examples of what different councils do. 4.3b says that the option that uses the example that if every single person presented the 17,500 vouchers, it would cost 192,000. I hope we all know that would never, ever, ever actually happen. And I'll be interested, because of Councillor Cordova's very sensible suggestion, that we're going to reconsider this next year, talking to someone like a Burnie City Council about what sort of return rate they actually have, because I think if you looked at other councils, you'd be able to have a fairly good understanding of what the actual return rate would be. I suspect it'd be, you know, well under 100%, probably, I suspect, under 50%. And the cost may not be different. The advocacy from community members for green waste vouchers over free green waste weekends is about flexibility and the ability for them to choose when they dispose of their green waste. It goes to Councillor Bastone's very good point that for her, she's looking at around this time to be disposing of green waste, and that's a sort of example where a voucher system would work better than a weekend. There are advantages to green waste weekends, though, and that touches on Councillor Westwood's point. I think we should market this as a bushfire preparedness weekend, not a free green waste weekend. In fact, we should stop saying it's a free green waste weekend, because it's not free. It's not free for anyone, actually. It's not even free for the people that dispose of it, because when we socialise the cost of this, it falls on all ratepayers. And so we have to consider why we're doing it. And we're doing it for a strategic purpose, and that is to have an impact on the amount of fuel loads in Kingborough as we lead up to and during bushfire season. So we encourage people by providing a free service and hope that that will mean that they will reduce the fuel loads on their own private properties. There's a stat, and I can't remember what it was. I think Councillor, not this evening, but other meetings, Councillor Cordova's referenced it, where there's a very high percentage of private land in Kingborough as opposed to public land. And so we need to have our private property owners on board when it comes to reducing fuel loads, because we can't do it ourselves. We've only owned a very small percentage of land in Kingborough. So council acting on its own to reduce fuel loads won't actually achieve much. We'll achieve much more by working with property owners to clear land in preparation for bushfire season. For all those reasons, I support the motion. I was going to suggest that we put something in there about renaming them, but Mr. Reeve has suggested that he'll turn his mind to rebranding them, which I think will be a really, really good idea. And I look forward to, once we have more information about the impact of our green waste bins and what that does in terms of demand for green waste weekends, we might see a lowering of demand, then we might be able to consider vouchers next year when that and also our budget situation is better known. Thanks again for the report. And Councillor Grace, would you like to sum up?
Yeah, just sum up briefly. Been a good exercise, but it's been an exercise that has now gone on for quite a few years at Kingborough. Councillor Cordova, I agree the system we should be looking at all options, not only the ticket option, but a free ticket or whatever, but we should be looking at options. I mean, I know, for instance, the Bruny Island Community Group have wanting to work with our council to develop a better strategy for cost savings within the green waste on the island. I've tried to get some things through. We've had a few managers at KWS. We've sort of got nowhere on introducing some better method. So therefore, I move this motion tonight because a lot of people have spoken to me over the years and they prefer closer to Christmas than after Christmas because a lot of shack owners are away and you can guess where that's coming from. The only other issue that I'd say, Mayor, is I'm a bit concerned about Gordon when it's got four bins down there. Are those bins are going to be a green waste?
Councillor Grace, you can't introduce new topics when you're summarising a debate, so you've got to stick to what's already been said.
Oh, I sort of jumped off the cart a bit, did I?
just a touch, Councillor Grace.
Yeah, well, I'll come back. I mean, that's all I need to say about it, Mayor.
Thanks a lot, Councillor Grace. So the motion moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Fox is that Council maintains the current number of free disposal weekends and reschedules the events to the November and January. It's actually typed, there's a little typo there, Ms. Morton. Yes, that's a bit better. I'll start again. The Council maintains the current number of free disposal weekends and reschedules the events to November and January to maximise the opportunity for property owners to reduce the fuel load on their properties and will consider a green waste voucher system for the 21-22 financial year. If you can unmute yourselves, please, councillors. I will now go through the list and ask you to say yes if you agree with the motion and no if you don't. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastine.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Grace.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street. Okay, chat bar for you, please. Councillor Street says yes on the chat bar. Councillor Loss.
Yes.
And Councillor Breit. Sorry. Sorry. For those watching on Facebook, Councillor has been having technology issues this evening. You can hear the reason why she's not making much of a contribution is because they're not working. So she's going to just sit in the chat bar. Yes, have you, Councillor Reid, have you typed a yes or a no in the chat bar for me? So I didn't get any of that. Yeah, you're a yes. So thumbs up. So for the audio recording, it's a yes from Councillor Reid. It's also a yes from Councillor Winter, which means that the vote was unanimous on a yes to that motion on green waste vouchers. Just to repeat again for members of the public, both Councillor Reid and Councillor Street are having technical issues. We haven't had these before in council meetings. We've had a pretty good run, but it was going to happen at some point that people were going to have issues, and it's happened tonight. So they're not speaking voluntarily. I'm sure they've both got lots to say. But we appreciate them sticking with us for the votes. The next item is the Kimbra Senior Citizens Club lease, and it's on page 182 with a recommended motion on page 183.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Watts. Second. Second by Councillor Cordova. And Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. This building was erected on council land many years ago at no cost to council. Today it is utilised fully by the Kingborough Senior Citizens Club. The amount of, what would you say, people they get, the participation rate is really fantastic, and it's doing what it should do, and that is it's aimed at the senior sits, with the senior sits running a comprehensive program for everyone and all that want to attend as a senior sit. And the recommendation I wholeheartedly agree with. They want 5 years. We'll give them 5 years and the rent of $10 per annum if demanded, and that they continue to do as they are doing now. So I recommend the recommendation.
It's Councillor Loss. I have Councillor Grace with his hand up. Councillor Grace.
I fully support 100% what Councillor Loss has stated. I really do support them.
Further comments, questions, contributions? Councillor Corover.
Thank you, Mayor. I will lend my voice in support of what has been said so far and recognise the really important role that Council plays in subsidising and facilitating good options for the community and making sure that Kingborough is a great place to live. And I want to recognise and I guess pay homage to all of the hard work of all of the volunteers of all of these organisations who are given peppercorn rent by the council, and in return they make an enormous contribution to the sense of place, to the sense of identity, and also to great community work. So I do want to thank very much all of the hardworking volunteers across our community who go such a long way above and beyond the call of duty to help out. I also want to raise the point that there is at 5.8, you can see that the government valuation for the premises indicates an assessed annual value of $28,000. So I think it's fundamentally important, not just for transparency, but also for a sense of all the good work that council is doing, to somewhere and somehow have some kind of schedule that lists all of the various contributions that council makes in terms of leasing out property. And that way, at the click of a button or somewhere on the website, we could see the full extent of council's assistance in what is fundamentally a good thing. So I look forward to supporting this motion, and I also think it's testament to the good work that council does in a spirit of generosity and goodwill with all of the not-for-profit organisations and all of those wonderful volunteers we have in the community. But I also want to, I guess, raise that point that I would like to broadcast those facts more widely than they're currently broadcast. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Midgley.
Thanks, Mayor. I do support this motion and also recognise the great work of the Kingborough Senior Citizens Club. I note as well the Meals on Wheels. Last time I did visit there, they operate from that place as well, which is an amazing essential service. And I have hired that hall myself. It is one of the best halls to hire in our municipality in regards to kitchen, accessing kitchen gear and things like that for a function. It's a really fantastic hall. I was actually quite surprised to note that it is one of our halls. I have been hiring on and off for 15 years for different fundraising events, and I had no idea that actually it was owned by council. I thought it was just the senior sits that actually owned the hall. So that was interesting to note. Also, in regards to the comment that Councillor Cordova mentioned, I have found out through some research that other councils do promote the benefit and recognise that they do give to some of these community halls, and they do promote that within their annual report as, the disclosing of the reduced rental and the benefits associated is actually provided within the annual report. So it does provide then community noting of the great assistance that council does give to many of our community groups, noting as well that it's hard to put a dollar value on the volunteer hours that go towards these community groups as well. And I also note the 5 years, I'm quite sure the reason why that we do 5 years is because that's part of the Local Government Act, so we can't increase that any further than the 5 years. I'm just wanting to wonder, Mayor, if that is actually correct, if we can actually increase the lease further to 5 years, or is 5 years the amount we give because of the Local Government Act?
Mr. Smay.
Through you, Mayor, the reason we go for 5 years does indeed relate to the Local Government Act. We could go longer, but there is a advertising process that we would need to go through in order to do that. That process requires advertising twice in a daily circulating newspaper. That comes at an expense. It does delay the process. So certainly in instances where the lessee is happy with a period of 5 years, we do tend to avoid going through what is an overly bureaucratic and somewhat outdated process. So, yes, Councillor Midgley is correct in relation to linking it back to the provisions of the Local Government Act, but we could go longer if necessary, but those are the reasons why.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. And Mayor, I'm just wondering as well if you could perhaps get a comment in regards to the matters that Councillor Cordova and I raised in regards to recognise the benefit in perhaps a website or annual report or something like that, and if that has been raised by other councillors previously, and any staff thoughts on that.
Through you, Mayor, this has been raised previously. Former Councillor Atkinson raised this matter, and in response, we did agree that wherever possible, we would put reports that were recommending a lease such as this into open council. Our previous practice had been to put them in closed council because there's provision under the local government meeting procedures to be able to do that. However, we have moved to putting them in open council so that the community can read the full report and see the rationale behind why we have recommended a peppercorn rental. In relation to the recording in an annual report, I take the point, but I'm not sure if it's as simple as recording the annual assessed value against the actual rental that we charge. The AAV obviously changes from year to year. It begs the question as to whether we'd be required to have to get updated valuations each year. That would come at a cost. Often there's differing levels of the degree to which the lessee has contributed to the cost of the building. Some lessees will fully fund the cost of the construction of the building. Other buildings council may make a contribution, and others the council may in fact own the building outright, and there's been a previous tenant that's since vacated and a new tenant comes in. So I guess I'm a little bit hesitant to recommend including the assessed annual value versus the actual rental in an annual report because it doesn't tell the full picture. It's certainly something that staff can turn their mind to in the future as to how we can better communicate the assistance that council is providing, but I'm just not sure that that particular suggestion hits the mark.
Thank you.
Further questions? A few of us haven't spoken, including the two that can't speak, but I'm sure everybody loves the Kingborough Senior Citizens Club. They are awesome, filled with great people, do great things. Enders Lunch is great. Very happy to continue to have them there, and this is an absolute no-brainer of a motion. Councillor Wallace, would you like to sum up?
Close, Mayor. No speakers again.
Okay, the motion is moved by Councillor Wallace, seconded by Councillor Cordova, and it's that the Kingborough Senior Citizens Club be offered a lease over the council-owned property at 35 Redwood Road, Kingston, that includes the following items, following terms and conditions, and there are one, two, three, six of them. So if you can unmute yourselves now, I will ask you to say yes if you agree with the motion, and no if you do not. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Race.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street. I can't speak, of course. He's going to type it in the chat bar. Councillor Wass.
Yes.
And Councillor Reet will also type in the chat bar a yes or a no. And I've got yes from Councillor Reet and yes from Councillor Street. That means the motion is carried unanimously. We move on to the appointment of Representative for CCL Unit Trust. There's a recommendation on page 186.
I'm happy to move that, Mayor.
Moved by Councillor Fox. Looking for a seconder.
Amanda, Mitchley.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchley. Councillor Fox, would you like to speak?
I agree with the council recommendation. I mean, Councillor Bastone has been a proxy in the past, and it's appropriate for the mayor to be appointed as representative on the CSL Unit Trust. So I think it's important that we support this motion. Thank you.
Councillor Grace.
I'm too late, Mayor. I was going to move it, but I got the hand up, but you must have seen it.
No, I must have missed
it. But I'm not going to sulk about it. I can wait for the next one.
A good one. Thanks, Councillor Grace. Any other speakers? There being none, we will go straight to the motion. It was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. And it's that council resolve to appoint the Mayor, Councillor Dean Winter, as council's representative to the CCL Unit Trust and Councillor Sue Bastone as proxy. We're going to go through the list if you don't mute yourselves. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Grace.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Boss.
Yes.
And Councillor Street and Reet will
yes.
Oh, Councillor Street is a yes. Councillor Reet, could you type in the chat bar yes? Oh, perhaps you already did. Yes, you did. 7:53. So Councillor Reet has said yes as well, which means the motion is carried unanimously. Next item. This time it is the May 2018 Community Recovery and Resilience Grants CRRG projects. And there's a recommendation on page 191. Would anyone like to move it? Councillor Grace?
I'm happy to move it.
Yes. It's moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Grace. Councillor Cordova.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor. And I commend this report. What we're looking at here, the purpose of this report is to summarise the result of three community recovery and resilience grant funded projects, and those are the Whitewater Creek Flood Study, the Kingston CBD Catchment Resilience Program, and Blackmans Bay Catchment Resilience Program, and to seek Council's endorsement for a number of recommendations made in these reports, which are quite extensive. There was a 400 page or so attachment with this report, which I guess had a great deal of specificity and detail, some of which was beyond my technical understanding in terms of the relative risks and potential remedies for flood studies. But importantly, I guess the main thing to understand is this concept of AEP, which is the exceedance. I forget what it actually stands for now, but so an AEP storm event, like for example, a 1% AEP storm event would be a 1% chance of that exceedance probability happening in a particular year. So where we used to refer to a 1 in 100 year flood, we're now talking about a 1% AEP event. And there's a great deal of detail in the report, which is very important, but ultimately the results indicate that the flood risk in Blackmans Bay arise from overland flow flooding at several locations, and that there are six main flooding hotspots within the catchment where structural mitigation options have been assessed. It goes on to talk about how all hotspots except for Illawarra Road experienced some flooding, some level of flooding during a 5% AEP storm event, so that's a 1 in a 20 year incidents of flooding, although the flood hazard is generally low. Overall, I would say that the recommendations contained herein are very important, and that when it comes to natural disaster mitigation and preparedness, the one thing of which we can be sure is that the more we turn our attention to it now, the cheaper it will be in the long run, but also fundamentally the less harm that there will be to our community. We know that we live in a municipality which is prone to various natural disasters. We have seen them and we've lived through them and we've suffered through them, but we've also learnt from them. And I think this report,
one of the reasons why it is so important is it reflects that we are constantly learning, discovering new information, and then making that transparent to our municipality so that everyone can prepare as best they can, and they can also take assurance from the fact that our council has the best interests of the community safety at heart. So I want to particularly thank Mr. Aronson for preparing this report and the authoriser as well, and I commend the report to the council. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Don't have anyone. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I was going to move it. Look, again, this is a document and a very good document, and it's identified various areas, particularly Blackmans Bay, Kingston. Mayor, I guess the concerns I have is over my lifetime with Kingborough, and I have spent many, many years associated with Kingborough and local government, I guess. I've seen so many floods, even in my day when I worked as an employee with the Kingborough Commission and Council. And we're still getting that flood area even now, today, in some cases, not all cases. Yes, we have come a long way. Don't worry about that. And yes, we have a new officer on now looking after our stormwater systems. And we have a long way to go. And that was one of the reasons I supported the levy for stormwater, because stormwater is an important issue. All I want to make sure of, Mayor, is that this document, again, don't go to dust. It's something that we can use. Council needs to be mindful of at Channel Highway. There's a good example. When we do the reconstruction, I noticed John Street. Quite sure what happened in John Street. I don't think there was a lot of preventions there for flooding. Most councillors are aware Coles has been flooded. I'm not sure whether it's once or twice. Even our council chambers has been flooded more than once. Kingston Channel Court's been flooded more than once. But this document gives us something, and the recommendations that we have here in front of us, I'm financially, I don't see where we've actually put a lot of funds to, but saying that, Mayor, we've got a document. We've got a live document that we can now go out and hopefully obtain grants from the federal and state government to help us with these problems. Does that make sense?
Sure does. Perfect sense.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. We have Councillor Cordova with a question.
Thank you, Mayor. It was remiss of me not to ask Mr. Aronson to help me summarise the report. So my question is, are there any additional points that Mr. Aronson would like to put a spotlight on for us?
Very large report. And so, Mr. Aronson, did you miss anything?
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. Well, trying to be brief, I think all three reports, they are sort of a first assessment to identify the flood risk and flood hazards within these catchments. And we've gone beyond just identifying the flood risk to also, on a preliminary stage, identify what potential mitigation options are available for council. And that's not just structural, but also non-structural ones, which could be strategies, planning processes, emergency management, education, and the likes. And we've gone through all those available mitigation options and then also done a multi-criteria assessment too, so that council have a catchment resilience program for Kingston CBD and Blackmans Bay, where we can see where should we start, what is the most reasonable mitigation measure to start working with and hopefully implement to build a more resilient community against flooding. Did that answer your question?
Councillor Cordova is nodding.
Excellent, thank you.
Further comments or questions in relation to this? Just briefly from me, I'm very surprised that we have, pleasantly surprised that we have the technical expertise to produce a report like this internally inside council. I'm not sure many councils in Tasmania could say that they do, but a lot of it went over my head as well. But I could tell it was a pretty impressive report. So it's good to have that background. I've got a constituent who wants to speak to me next week about why she can't build on a property in Blackmans Bay, and we have the evidence to explain to people why we have planning controls in place to protect people based on the evidence that we've gathered and the expertise the council's got. Councillor Fox, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to hear what you've just said, because that was virtually how I feel too. I think the report is absolutely amazing, and I'm so excited. I was really excited to see all the pictures of where the rivers are, where the flows are, where the problems are, and it's so important to get the community awareness raised of these issues so that, as you say, with planning proposals coming through, we have the evidence to show where the problems are and where we can actually build and where we really shouldn't, or where people know they're taking an educated risk and therefore are making a wise or educated guess as to whether or not they should be building or not building in certain areas. Having lived through many floods in Kingborough and experienced unimaginable floods in some cases, it's been so difficult to be able to refuse a planning application on the basis of not that knowledge, but now I can. So I think it's really exciting and informative and very, very, very well done document. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Fox. To summarise, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. We have indeed, I think, struck the nub of the issue, and I want to thank once again Mr. Aronson for that terrific summary. What we have here is identifying the risk and identifying some of the options that we have before us, but significantly we are delineating between structural and non-structural risks and therefore structural and non-structural interventions. And so to draw an analogy, I guess, from what I've heard is, you know, I'm looking now on page 189 and it says here for Blackmans Bay, the results indicate that the structural mitigation assessment is preliminary only and requires further investigation to address all potential impacts, such as amenity and environmental impacts. But a preliminary and indicative cost of $560,000 has been identified for the construction of all three levees. So that's an example of a structural intervention. But there's other non-structural interventions, so changing planning. And that's what Mr. Aronson hit upon, and that's what I'm trying to summarise now, is that an analogy would be 98% of Kingborough is bushfire prone, so we've got the option of saying everyone should build a fire bunker with its concomitant costs, or we've got the option of saying, well, here's a risk, get prepared, know your risk, let us help you to act when you need to and to be ready to act in the case of an emergency. So by identifying both the structural and the non-structural mitigation elements, that's what is the power of this report. And I commend it to the council, and thanks once again to the author.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Just for the record, you're skating on very thin ice with the new material rule there. Let's keep an eye on that one. Councillor Cordova moved and Councillor Grace seconded, and the motion is quite in-depth, actually, so I'm going to bring it up on my other screen and try and figure out how I can summarise it. The recommendation is the council, A, engage with the community about the results of this study, B, incorporate the 1% AEP storm event for year 2100, flood maps for the catchment developed in this study, C, develop a waterway maintenance plan, D, further investigate and where appropriate implement other non-structural measures, and E, further investigate the proposed flood protection levees along Whitewater Creek as a preferred potential structural mitigation option. There are also points for Kingston CBD and Buckens Bay as printed. So I'm now going to ask you to unmute your microphones and prepare for the vote. Councillor Westwood, if you agree with motion, please say yes. If you disagree, please say no. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Aye. Yes.
Good. Councillor Grace.
Yep. Yep.
Councillor Mitchell.
Yes.
Councillor Street.
Yes.
Councillor Woss.
Yes.
And Councillor Reet. He's probably going to use the chat bar. Councillor Reet has actually texted me the word yes. Now she's got it in the chat bar. Excellent. We're going well tonight. Okay. So the motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with the Regulation 15 of Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes is applications for leave of absence, looking for a mover and a seconder.
I'll so move.
Second. Moved by Councillor Fox, second by Councillor Cordova. Just if you can unmute yourselves, I'm just going to ask you all to say, if you agree, please say aye.
Aye.
If you disagree, please say no. That motion is carried unanimously, and that means that we end the closed session of the open session of council. And I want to say thank you very much to members of the public who have persevered through, because I'm sure it was very interesting, but have sat through this council meeting with us tonight. We do appreciate it. We think we've probably still got another meeting or so. Next Monday night is our big budget meeting. It starts at 5:30 p.m. Before all of highs and lows and interesting things. So please join us then if you'd like to keep up to date with Kimberley Council matters. Have a good night.